And welcome to episode 14 of The Spectrum. This was recorded on March 12th, 2025. Before we get into the episode, I want to apologize for a technical mistake. The audio from my microphone did not get recorded. I did my best to recover my audio from the guest microphone, so if you hear any oddness in my audio, that's why. I tried to clean it up as much as I could, but it isn't perfect. Today we're going to talk about asexuality. This is perhaps the least well-known area of the LGBTQ spectrum. It's certainly a topic I don't know much about. To help educate us, we have Annalise, who volunteered to come speak with us today. Because we're talking about sexuality, even if talking about its absence, if this is a topic you don't want to hear about, or perhaps have small children in the room with you that you don't want them to hear, then this may not be the podcast for you today. We don't discuss anything explicit, but if talk about sexuality makes you uncomfortable, this is your chance to head for the exit. I know most people are familiar with the idea of same-sex and cross-sex attraction. You know, you've got your gay people and your straight people. I kind of think of these as like axes on a graph where you've got who am I attracted to on one axis and what is how do I think of myself on another axis for gender? And then apparently there's this third axis that a lot of people aren't aware of, which is how much am I attracted to people sexually.
We're going to add a couple more axes, unfortunately.
We can go multidimensional.
Yeah.
Give us, in your own words, the elevator pitch for what asexuality is.
Unfortunately, I've been running through these in my head for the last few days, trying to figure it out. What you might know of as the Kinsey Scale came out in 1948, and Dr. Kinsey was researching sexuality. And he had a graph of 1 to 6, with 1 being I've exclusively thought about sex with people of the opposite gender, 6 being I've exclusively only had people of had thoughts with people of the same gender, spectrum in the middle, with 3 being like exactly the same, and that would probably be what people think of bisexuality more. And then he had 0 on the scale, which was not reactive. Not interested. And the word he used for that, I believe, was asexual. A in this case meaning not.
Right. When you talk about asexuality in this context, that could be taken to mean that this is a person who doesn't feel any sexual attraction to another person, regardless of their gender.
It could be, but that's kind of where it gets complicated.
Okay.
Because with all the other sexualities, you're talking about a positive. I am attracted to this person. I am attracted to those people. And asexuality is trying to prove a negative. So it's kind of weird. It's a little bit different from a lot of the others. And then there's a lot of different ways to not be attracted to someone. One thing I've heard is rather than an absent, because some asexual people do feel sexual urges, or they are interested in it, or they don't not mind it. They'll have sex with their partner to try and please their partner. Some people are not, absolutely not into it. You can think of it like food. You can be kind of meh on a food, but if it's your partner's favorite food, you'll have it for dinner. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's your partner's favorite food, and you're like, I'm not going to eat that. It's not going to happen. It's kind of the same thing. So there's a lot of different ways about it. So one way I've heard is asexual is self-contained. There isn't a desire for another person to be involved in the sexuality. It's the lack of desire, not the lack of existence, okay. I guess.
A couple of questions which may come off as kind of flippant, but they're not intended that way.
As long as you don't make the photosynthesis joke. Was it that? Was it that?
Still trying to figure out what that one is.
Well, like, well, if you don't reproduce sexually, do you use photosynthesis? That kind of, yeah. It's a lot of dad jokes.
No, what I was going to say is, and this is something that lesbians get hit with a lot, was
yes. Look,
you haven't met the right person yet.
Ask them if they've met the right boy.
And yeah, and this obviously isn't that, because this is more like a general condition than a specific set of circumstances, right? Okay.
There's a lot of ways to be not interested. Like you said, there's a lot of crossover with lesbians, because initially, maybe what a lot of lesbians notice is just that they're not attracted to boys, rather than that they are attracted to women. I personally considered myself bisexual for a little while, because I was like, well, I have equal interest in boys and girls. 0. Yeah. So I came out to one of my friends as bisexual initially.
if I'm hearing you correctly, there is a difference between asexuality and libido.
Yes.
And so someone...
Which is some of the spectrum, which some of the axes is, yeah.
So someone who could still have a strong libido, a desire for sex, just not necessarily with...
Other any particular person, yeah. Which is where you get the libido axis and the romantic axis.
Okay.
Because there's also aromantics, where they're like, I am sexually attracted to other people. I am not getting in a relationship. The relationship part just freaks them out, usually, is my understanding.
I was reading a little bit about this, and I was having a hard time understanding the difference between a romantic attraction and a sexual attraction. Because for me, they're much the same thing.
Me too. So I don't know how helpful I will be.
Yeah.
And that is also sort of my point with bringing some of this is what we call, I think, what is it? A micro minority or micro label. You can tell someone like, I like cars and I like trucks and I like SUVs. And then there's someone over here who is talking about Ski-Doo models. It's a different ballpark. They're being way more specific. If you ask them, what's your favorite vehicle? They'll probably tell you a car. And then if you get to know them really well, you know they're a Ski-Doo person. Okay. I don't know if that's a good metaphor at all. I'm trying to remember where we were with the question.
That I think you've done a reasonable job of
I don't know
answering what we can. And mm-hmm. I think what we're saying here is this is a concept that is not a thing.
There's the boxes of if you're a lesbian, you're not attracted to guys.
Yeah.
If you're gay, you're not attracted to women. Bisexual is kind of where they put everyone who does have a little bit, even though, again, like Kinsey Scale 1948, they found people with incidental homosexuality or a little bit of preference in one way or another. Her labels are kind of like, we lost the boxes. The boxes kind of fell apart. The label isn't going to give you a sense of experience at all.
I mean, these boxes are useful as generalizations to help kind of get your mind around a concept. They're not necessarily the definition of the concept, and we shouldn't limit ourselves to those boxes. They're just a useful explainer. They're not the thing.
But it's also that you're not going to know all of them. Within asexuality, we have microlabels. You can be a demisexual, you can be graysexual, you can be lithromantic, and no one's really expecting anyone to know what those are.
Can you explain what they are?
I can try, but I don't know if it'll quite be the point.
Okay.
The thing is, once someone's talking to you about it, they're already willing to talk to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there are all these tiny little facets of identity that don't get explained easily. People are trying to find their box with tiny little labels, and it is still actually a fluid experience together. With the romantic axis, most people who are lesbians are attracted to women, and they would prefer to be in a relationship with a woman. They might one day meet like a single dude who they're willing to settle down with and would have a family with, but they wouldn't have sex with. That's the diversion, or of the romantic and the sexual. I think part of the reason there's so much of that with asexuality is because these are people who have been looking for someone they are attracted to their entire lives, and they never found it. And so they found all these tiny little facets of ways that their attraction does work. That isn't necessary. You don't have to explore it. But because they were trying so hard to find it, they did. They found some stuff. And they then tried to talk to each other about it and started to compare with that.
Would it be helpful to go through your own kind of coming out to yourself experience, how you figured yourself out?
I can try to. I'm not sure how helpful it'll be, because again, there are so many different ways to not, there's a million ways to fail to invent a light bulb,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure. But at least,
yeah.
You know, it gives people one concrete example of,
yeah.
of how someone decided that this was them.
I remember being driven to kindergarten and asking my mom if there was a way to get married and not have children. So my mom has known about this the whole time. She's been aware. My parents had a really messy divorce when I was 7 and kind of assumed for a long time that I believed romance was dead and the divorce killed it, and that I was deeply traumatized by it so that I would never have a romantic relationship or whatever, and that was why I had no interest. So very funnily, I thought, yeah, this is totally normal and understandable. Everyone was talking about late bloomers. People had like celebrity crushes, like, don't you think Orlando Bloom is so cute? And I'm over here like...
How old were you at this point?
That was probably in like middle school. So 10, 12, they had the baby crushes on celebrities. I'm over here. Pokemon has just come out in 2000. I'm marrying Ash Ketchum for his assets. His assets are his Pokemon, to be clear.
What happened next?
I didn't marry Ash Ketchum.
Well, everybody has that first disappointment in life.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. As well, stuff kept not happening. I kept not being interested. I learned how to read and I got on the internet. Yeah, I must have gotten on the internet in like seventh grade or something. And I started finding fandom, basically people drawing characters of books we all liked and stuff like that. And again, at that time, other people definitely had crushes and were teasing each other about crushes. And they're like, Annalise, who's your celebrity crush? And I'm like, I don't know those men. So I was like, I might be a lesbian because clearly I'm not interested in men. So I'm looking at the girls in my class and I'm like, I don't care about them either.
I've talked to a bunch of gay men, a bunch of lesbians. Almost always the gay men knew who they were first. A lot of the women didn't know until they were adults and well into adulthood in some cases. And it sounds like asexuality, or at least in your particular experience of it, may have been a similar kind of thing where you didn't realize that what you were experiencing wasn't typical.
Well, everyone's like, yeah, late bloomers. People kept telling you like, puberty's gonna be weird and funny and you're gonna have weird feelings. And it's like, my weird feeling is you're all insane. And I understood that that was the typical puberty thing that they were all doing. And I was like, well, I'm traumatized by my parents' divorce.
You had your explanation. You weren't seeking anything else.
No, I wasn't unhappy. And that's the key thing. Again, we've had this for a long time. The Asexual Manifesto came out in 1972. And it has a paragraph in it that says, this is not celibacy. This isn't being repressed. This isn't being unhappy not having sex. This isn't a decision made to refrain. And it's also not a state of suffering. We're just kind of chilling here, not really wanting to do much.
So I think that's a key point. This is there, not that there's something wrong with you. It's you're wired a little bit differently.
Yeah. And when they started changing around the DSM, then they put asexuality in it. The key difference between that and whatever illness they've said for low libido is you're not distressed by it. Is the key point. Now, some people are, because I've heard a lot of stories about people who grew up and before they realized they were asexual, they thought they were broken because they couldn't love anyone and they didn't relate to their peers, or they were sexually attracted, but they couldn't have romance, or they had romance, but, you know, couldn't stand the concept of having sex and such. So there is some distress, but it's the social distress of having to follow.
Right. And that's true in the gay community and in the trans community. Where
exactly. Yeah.
Beat themselves up for feeling something and feeling like they were broken. When did you get this aha moment that this was me?
A friend of mine mentioned asexuality and was like, I think you're asexual. And I think by that point I'd already come across it and sort of been like, okay. So it wasn't a huge revelation, again, because I wasn't really searching. But because I had gotten online and into that fandom space, that's where I found the word. Because I don't know if you know this or not, people online are really, really intense about fictional character relationships. But because a lot of people on the internet care a whole lot about fictional character relationships, there's a noticeable group of people who are like, I like the story, but I don't care about that. And so that's where I found a lot of words being asexual and a lot of the asexual community. And you'll still find a huge asexual community in fandom because they're pushed over here.
In your own life, in the kinds of relationships you've had with people, I'm assuming you've had close friends who were very important to you. Asexual doesn't mean you don't have connections to people.
Oh, I've imagined marrying every single one of my best friends and being like, how would we do this? And I've crossed people off the list. Like, Steven can't stand being around people that long. It won't work.
Like, you're actually a very social person.
I want friends. I liked living near friends in college where you could, like, walk down the dorm and talk to people. I want to have friends. I just don't want this dating shenanigans to muck it up. I did have one best friend who we did date for a little while with her knowing that I was asexual. She later broke it off because it wasn't quite what she wanted. And I'm over here like, okay, I don't know what you thought was going to change. So it was like, it was fine-ish. I mean, when we started going out, I explicitly said, I don't really want anything to change. I just want us to be special and that we're a special people to each other. And that's what I got out of it. It was like, yes, I'm their special person. And that was great. But
obviously that wasn't what I wasn't, the other person was looking for.
Don't know what she would have got out of otherwise. But so like, I do want to have very close friends. I've wanted to adopt kids since I was like 5 and was like, I'm not getting pregnant and stuff like that. And I've been like, well, if I didn't adopt a kid, which of my friends would be okay helping raise it? Is it just going to be 17 cats? I don't know. I am also aromantic. I don't want to do the whole thing.
You talked about how you can always assume that it was your parents' relationship that set you down this path. Is that something you still feel today? Or do you think that was just coincidental?
I think it could have been coincidental. There was a very strong sense that however you got here, if it is useful to you right now, good. Because there's a lot of the micro identities under asexual are like, I think I would be able to have sex and be in love with someone in this situation, is a lot of the micro labels. And of course, you have some people who had a sexual trauma in their life, and they say, I can't do any of that anymore. I'm asexual. I would be very happy having nothing happen in my life ever again. So there's people who are like, I think I became asexual due to trauma. There's some people who are like, I was born this way. And then there's some people who genuinely might be late bloomers. Mm-hmm. And some of the criticism about asexuality is like, well, you're stopping kids from discovering who they really are. If you move out of it, if you find something else, if this label was good for you, then we're happy it was there to tell you that you didn't have to do anything, you didn't have to feel anything.
I think that's a good bit of advice for anybody. Whatever mm-hmm. label you're using to describe yourself, if that label no longer fits, mm-hmm. you have to keep it.
Yeah. We're changing constantly all the time. Eventually, we might change enough that something's unrecognizable, but like it's gradual. You don't know when. You don't know what it would be.
At this point in your life, let's say you meet somebody who's a friend. At what point do you decide to be open with them about yourself?
I wait until they ask if I'm dating, and then I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, are you interested in anyone? No. This happens a lot in, like, the staff room.
Right, and the normal kinds of questions that, mm-hmm. that people get, and you start leading them down this path by mm-hmm. the questions.
Yeah, and sometimes people are like, so, are you gay? And it's like, I'm ace. And they're like, what's that? And it's like, don't worry about it. I don't say don't worry about it, but I do tell them not to worry a lot. And it's like, I'm just not interested. And most people take that pretty well, usually because I do make them ask the question first. But like, and I'll wear little rainbow stuff and announce my presence in those ways and voice support. And if I have several coworkers who are LGBT of some strand or other, and I'll use a lot of us pronouns. And if they eventually ask, then I'll be like, I'm ace. And it's fine.
And ace is a shorthand for asexual.
Yes. I do make a joke that I'm triple A because I'm asexual, aromantic, agender. I keep saying they're micro-identities, and I did write down a couple numbers to give people an idea of what I mean by micro. In like 2025, there was a Gallup poll that asked people to self-identify, and I think it's like 9.5-10% of people in the United States that Gallup polled are LGBTQ somehow. That is 1 in 10 people. Of the 1 in 10 people, 1.7% of those LGBT people are asexual. So the total population is like 0.08. The United States population, so yeah, if you have 100 people, maybe 1 in 4 chance one of them is asexual, is what we mean by it's pretty rare that we know of. There's not a lot of people who identify with it at this moment. But also, as of 2025, the United States population is like 340 million. So 0.8 of 340 million is still 27 million people. So there's not many people, and there are also a lot of people. You might not expect to meet very many asexual people. There are still 27 million of us at least in the United States. Again, I run into them constantly. because I think we all kind of hang out with people who don't have much to talk about when it comes to dating, and we all kind of eventually drift over here. For context, the redhead population of the United States is 4%. So you're about twice as likely to meet a queer person as a redhead, and four times more likely to meet a redhead than an ace person. For every four redheads, you've met one ace. How's that?
That's a great way to put it.
Numbers are hard, but they also really contextualize a lot of stuff, I think. Yeah. But that's also, the numbers are why I wanted to say, like, why I didn't want to give a huge list of micro-identities and micro-genders, and more emphasize that if someone's telling you about them, they'll probably be willing to explain them. There's so many ways that everything can go all the time, constantly. I don't think it's possible to memorize a list of all the different ways. And it's just, you have to be able to talk to people and listen to what they tell you about themselves.
So really, asexual is more like an umbrella term that is several different possible ways of being.
Technically, aromanticism is separate, but I can't separate them. So in my mind, we're just buddies over here under the umbrella. Yeah.
And I, like I said, that was the problem that I was having when I was reading that. It's like, how is that separate from this? And how could somebody who has a high libido not be sexually attracted to other?
This is where we cut out for children. Masturbation.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I ultimately realized.
Yeah. You don't think about it. But also, some people don't have the libido. And you tell people that and they think you're crazy.
Yeah.
And, and they're like, wow, you have so much time. It's like, no, I'm really busy reading about fictional characters still.
So we've covered a lot of different ground here. And mm-hmm. Hopefully we've given people at least a basic understanding of what the concept is. Is there something we haven't touched on that you think is important?
I don't know. I think I really did just want to be like, there's no way to memorize the whole spectrum. The important thing is really meeting people where they are and trying to figure out not how to relate to them, but understand there's 100 different ways to relate and you're going to match up with one of them. I can try and explain aromanticism again, but I really can't separate the two at all. I have no idea the difference. I'm just like, all right.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing to note is that, mm-hmm. that because this is a broad concept, mm-hmm. and these words are in some ways very subjective. Mm-hmm. One person's interpretation of them might not be the same as another.
Yeah, like, can you define sexual attraction for me?
Well,
I know, right?
I'll take my stab at it, which is mm-hmm. almost a circular definition.
Yeah.
Sexual attraction means that I want to have sex with someone.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, and sure. I don't know.
And that's not necessarily the same as mm-hmm. having a romantic relation. There are plenty of people who have sex with people that are not romantically involved with them. Mm-hmm.
And that's most of where I'm like, well, they don't want to continue the relationship. They might want to be friends.
Yeah. I had a friend in college who was gay. Mm-hmm. Still is gay, of course. But
maybe.
No.
Might be bisexual.
He is definitely not.
Okay.
But he was incredible at, we'd go out to a restaurant and he would come home with the telephone number of the waiter. But he was definitely not, mm-hmm. at least in that point of his life, not interested in a relationship. Mm. He wanted to have sex. And so there was someone who was definitely not interested in a romantic relationship, at least at that point in his life.
Yeah.
But he was definitely interested in having as much sex as he could.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we know there's people who are the opposite. There's a lot of women go through menopause and they come out the other side like, I didn't need that anymore.
Yeah.
I still love my partner if I have my partner, but they don't necessarily need sex anymore. And I think that's probably the closest to asexuality that I know of for sure. Yeah. So I'm really waiting on menopause. Sounds great. Can't wait.
Now I completely lost my train.
I'm sorry.
Oh, we're talking about romantic. And I probably fall into this category. The idea of having sex with someone with whom I'm not romantically involved, mm-hmm. it's not something that I could do.
So your romantic axis is heavily weighing real heavy on the whole. Well, and the important thing with that is letting everyone know what the cards are on the table. If everybody agrees it's a one-night stand, there's nothing wrong. Well, and that leads into, we discussed briefly about polyfolk who have more than one relationship at the same time, not cheating because everyone's agreed.
Right.
And that's the key thing. If everyone knows about it, then it's, and everyone's agreed it's okay, then there isn't anything really wrong.
Whatever judgments we think about things on our own, we have to remember that not everybody is wired the same way we are. And and to try to put ourselves in their perspective, at least conceptually, to understand that not everybody wants the same thing in a relationship or even that relationship itself.
I relate a lot to poly people because if I could get all my friends to live in the same house, I would super do it. It's like, yeah, I want all my friends here to help out. And also we can hang out in the evening. This sounds great. That's the entirety of a relationship. I'm good.
Any last words you'd like to leave us with?
Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for stopping by. I mean, this was a complicated conversation, but thank you, Annalise, for stopping by and really helping me understand something about which I knew next to zero, about as close to zero as you could get and say you knew anything.
Yeah.
That's where I was. And so you've given me a chance to learn something new about the people out there inhabiting the same world that I'm in. And I think that's a great thing because, you know, despite what some people seem to think, diversity is a good thing.
I grew up on a farm. So I keep thinking about humans in the context of nature. If you have another person around who's not interested in stuff, that's another person to just kind of help out, you know?
Well, thank
you so much.
All right, everybody. Thank you for stopping by to chat with us today about asexuality, and we'll see you next time on the spectrum. If you have an experience about any part of the LGBTQ life experience you'd like to share, you can email me at spectrumpodcasthost@gmail.com and we can have a conversation just like this. Until next time, take care.